What was some of the things that really stuck out for you, or some of the things that you really remember?
I mean, one of the things that I remember the most when we were going out to that village in the mountains was our driver got lost in like the middle of Asia, thousands of kilometers away from Canada.
So it was kind of scary. Could you just read the signs out there to get back to where you're going?
Huh?
I said, could you just read the street signs out there in the mountains on the dirt trail?
Oh, yeah. There was a sign that said, turn here and there will be good, and then turn here, instant death. So we went there anyway.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Terry Eberhardt.
We're going to roll with, so here we go. Super excited to have the second podcast for us, for me and Holden, along with the one and only Elson Solberg, who's been a big inspiration for actually starting this podcast. So super excited about doing this. We're just sorting out a few technical difficulties before getting rolling here. So yeah, super excited to have Elson with us on the podcast. I don't know what episode that's going to be this season, but it's going to be the second episode for myself and Holden as a co-host. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Really excited to have Elson on with us. I've known Elson now for about 12 or 13 years. First met Elson at a, you know, Agritrend meeting, town hall meeting way back in the day. Wowed me with his amazing knowledge and brilliance back then, and more recently on a trip with Elson to Asia, in a discussion there, kind of got into a discussion about sharing knowledge and those kind of things. And it's one of the inspirations for us to get involved with this podcast. So that's pretty cool. So Elson, why don't you start off? Tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you're about, and what do you think we're going to chat about today?
Well, thanks, Terry. Thanks so much for this opportunity. It's a real honor, actually, to be on this podcast with you and your amazing son, Holden, who I used to chide while we were in Asia and called him Riley, because Holden was just down the road from Riley. But anyway, besides that, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. But what I will say about myself is something that's just recently come to my awareness, and that is, I guess the reason I've been put on the face of the planet is to be a coach. And what it means to be a coach is to always, when you're interacting with the likes of you or Holden or a farmer or anybody, is that there's always some wisdom and some knowledge that enriches their life. And I think once I realized that that was why I was put on this planet, it gave me a lot more clarity in terms of what my life was about. So I'm in a pretty cool space right now. I'm 63, going on, I don't know, 17, and I'm doing a lot of really cool things in my life that are all about helping other people enrich their life. And if I stay true to that truth, I think the rest of my life will be really, really super awesome. And so, you know, one of the recent experiences that you and I and Holden had was a visit to Laos and then Vietnam. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a minute. But it's one of those trips and one of those experiences that, you know, I really, really treasure. And I wish we could cram more of those into our lives. But, Yeah, so that's me, and that's a little bit of what I'm thinking these days, and maybe that's a good place to get started.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been an awesome experience doing all kinds of things with you over the last decade. And the coaching and the mentoring, I mean, I always used to kind of joke about, I guess, one of my earliest experiences with you as well was just thinking about this now as we're discussing, was when I first started my coaching business. And we were working on some of this precision stuff. And I had a little grower meeting set up in Russell, and I lined you up to come out and speak. You were going to be the highlight of the meeting. I put this presentation together, and it was going to be, you know, really awesome, but I was too scared to do it myself. And you came to the meeting. We had a bunch of growers there, maybe 10 growers or something. It wasn't a huge meeting. And I think it was literally like 10 minutes before the meeting was supposed to start. You're just like, I think you need to make the presentation. And I was like, what? Like, are you serious? I can't do this. Like, all these guys are here. I'm going to be totally freaked out. And you're like, no, I mean, this is your stuff. You know it better than I am. Like, you go do it. And you forced me to go and make that presentation. And I was so scared, but I did it. I survived. I don't know if 10 people fell asleep or they remembered something. I don't really remember what happened after that, but you know, you forced me, you know, maybe sometimes like I force Holden to do things, but you forced me to do it, and I didn't think that I could, and I did, and I survived. And I really remember that. And one of the things I always remembered about working with you is you always pushed other people to reach their full potential, and you never really took the credit yourself, or any credit for helping do that. But that's one thing that always really was inspiring about working with you.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because that's one of my favorite memories of our relationship. And you didn't put anybody to sleep. You knocked it out of the park. And it was a really proud moment for me. So good on you.
that was cool. That was very cool. So, yeah, I think one of the things that we both really share a passion for is for helping others. And I guess, you know, I had a pretty amazing experience a few years ago of being involved with this whole Time Harvest for Hunger project. And, you know, maybe I'll share a little bit of that story, because I think it's really relevant and it's really powerful. So, I mean, that happened back in 2012. I guess I had an experience, really close, a friend of ours, his name was Adrian, and his wife, we used to hang out with them lots at the lake. They loved surfing and that kind of thing. And they were much younger than us, than Lachelle and I, but we started hanging out with them, and he was so passionate about, you know, getting out to the lake and spending time with friends, and, you know, a sunny day, you'd be texting back and forth and like, oh, it's amazing out there. Can't wait to get in. Such a positive guy, and would do anything for anybody. And I remember that we had this one Sunday out there. It was a really good time, and they got separated from us in the group. We were at the beach, and he sent me a text. He said he had to go home, right? He had some chores or something came up and whatever. And I was like, kind of, don't worry about it. Right. And, 2 days later, on a Tuesday morning, a mutual friend phoned me and said, yeah, Adrian's gone. He died in a construction accident this morning. And it was a really, really shocking experience. He was 21, just married with a young wife. And he had run a construction business. A young guy was up in a boom and got too close to the power line and started getting electrocuted. Even though Adrian knew that he shouldn't go and help, right? He went to try to lower the boom. It arced across him. At the end of the day, the guy in the basket lived, and he died. And I remember sitting on the couch, wherever it was, or at that moment, and I looked at my phone, and the last message that I sent to Adrian, when he sent me this message, like, oh, I'm so sorry, I had to go home, you know, and I messaged him back and I said, don't worry about it. There'll be another day. Mm. And there wasn't another day. And so I was asked to be a pallbearer at his funeral. It was a pretty emotional experience. There was a huge amount of people there, and that he had really influenced a lot of people's lives in a very positive way, even as a very young person. And they had worked with the youth group. There was a basket with all these bows tied on it, and there was over 200 bows on there. That was how many kids they had touched the lives of. It was pretty, pretty amazing. And one of the things that they said that really stuck with me was, you know, people won't remember you for the car that you have or the house that you live in or the things that you've done. They'll remember you for what you've done for other people. And in that moment, I was sitting there thinking, no one's ever going to remember me, because what have I ever done for anybody that wasn't for myself, right? And it's kind of a self, even that thought was very selfish, but that's, it really struck me. And it was about a week later that this meeting came up for the Soul Time Harvest for Hunger project. And these guys used to use their land for the threshing machines and stuff. And of course I talk a lot once in a while. And I had some ideas to share about what they could do. And near the end of the meeting, they're like, well, we need to elect a chairperson for this project. And they're like, you should do it. And normally I'd be like, no way, I've got kids and farming and everything else. But I decided to do it, because I thought, hey, this is something, I was inspired by what happened there, and this is something that I could do to help other people. And it started us down that journey. And it just so happens, ironically, today, you know, I don't know why, I just out of my dresser, I pulled out the Old Time Harvest for Hunger shirt, right? And you were coming out here today. But anyways, I put this on this whole journey to creating that event. And, you know, it ended up breaking the world record at that time. There was like 6,500 people that came, and we raised over $142,000 for the Canadian Food Grains Bank. And through that, I ended up traveling to Ethiopia, which was an unbelievable, life-changing experience. And then coming back from that, I just thought, man, I wish I could share this with my children and my family and have them see the things that I saw. And I guess that's what inspired us to work on creating a plan to take our family with you to Laos and go on this, another different kind of mission trip. And so that's kind of a little bit of a story behind that. But anyways, why don't you share a little bit about the Give a Shirt project that you're involved with, which I think is really cool, and how that got started and why you're so passionate about that.
Oh yeah, for sure, Terry. That story, even though I've heard it a couple, three times, still gives me chills. So, good on you, right? Sometimes we need a walk upside the head to change the trajectory of our lives. And I think the trajectory of your life and your wife's life and your expanded kids' lives have benefited dramatically from all of that. So when it comes to the shirt, one small advertisement, www.giveashirt.ca. How that started is kind of weird, because back when my youngest daughter was 6 years old, we were planning on taking a trip to Thailand and to Laos, and through synchronicity and a whole bunch of weirdness, my then wife got in touch with a guy by the name of Andrew Brown, who was in Laos running owning a hotel, but also participating in helping out an orphanage at the time that held about 600 kids. And what we decided, prior to the decision to go there and to start the Give a Shirt Foundation, because my daughter was only six, she was asking all kinds of questions. Why are these 600 kids living in an orphanage? Where are their parents? You know, those kind of questions. And what are they? Are they poor and all that sort of stuff? And of course, they are extremely poor. It's one of the poorest countries on the planet. And so she came up with the idea that we should collect things and take them there. But she didn't have the concept of what 600 was. So her mom and I said, well, 600 kids is about the same number of kids that go to your school. And she thought for a few seconds and said, well, I have a whole bunch of stuff that I don't need, and my friends at school probably do too. So why don't we collect a bunch of clothes and stuff and take them to the orphanage in Laos? And so that was the start of GiverShirt. That trip, we took six extremely large pink and black hockey bags full of about 1,200 or 1,400 pieces of clothing. And we had the opportunity to physically hand out all of that clothing to each kid individually. And much like your experiences with Harvest for Hunger and everything else, it was one of those life adjusting moments. And so with that, a couple of years later, we filled a sea can with 30 to 40,000 pieces of clothing and 1 to 2,000 pieces of used blankets and school supplies and stuff. And a group of 14 of us went over there. And that tradition has not changed. My daughter's now 15. We have a sea can that's ready to go anytime now for delivery in February of 2020. I was overwhelmed by the fact that you and your family took the risk and the opportunity to join us. And it was a pleasure to watch your daughters and this young man, Holden, participate in all of that, and to just see all of the interactions. We delivered clothing to three orphanages, I believe, and three or four villages. And the project has now expanded to those same three orphanages, but now 14 villages. And when you think about it, at the end of the day, every time we send a sea can there, we touch the lives of about 4,000 children. And something as simple as a shirt or a pair of pants or a book or a blanket dramatically changes their lives. And it was so cool to share that experience with your entire family at the time, that and just see how transformative it was for you and for all of you. And to then, after the Lao visit for GiverShirt, we went on to Vietnam and shared a week there, and lots of great memories. Apparently Holden's over the thing where I tried to drown him as we parasailed in the ocean, so he's smiling. But that was a really freaky moment. Not only did I get over my fear of heights and parasailing, I didn't get over my fear of water, which is why I tried to drown Holden. But at the end of the day, GiverShirt provided us that opportunity to share some really cool life-altering experiences that I'll cherish for the rest of my life in both Laos and in Vietnam. So, Holden, thanks, buddy. I'm glad you don't hold a grudge. I was way scarier than you were, I'm sure. And Terry, thanks, for participating in that and continuing to participate in that. I know you guys have collected a lot of clothing and stuff that has been shipped over there subsequently. I think we're up to six sea cans now. I think the next one is seven. And it's, one of the things that I'm really, really passionate about, because at some level it is kind of coaching, and it's giving back, and it's changing people that are less fortunate changing their lives. You don't only change the kids' lives. You change entire villages' lives with the impact that we've had. So, again, one of the reasons I'm so proud to be on this podcast with the two of you is a very, very important part of my life.
So, Holden, what do you remember about that? I mean, not only was it a pretty amazing experience, it was, we had quite a bit of fun. So you remember when we first got into Laos and we went to that first, you know, orphanage? I think there was about 500 kids living in that orphanage. Like, what was your thoughts? What did you think about that at the time?
I was thinking about, like, how much kids there are that don't have parents, and that I'm lucky to have both of my parents and not live in an orphanage.
You know, that recorded now for
yeah, I know, Dad. I know.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like actually kind of really sad at the beginning. But then once I got to like know them and talk to some of the kids, well, I couldn't really talk because I didn't speak the same language, but talk to like the owner, then I didn't feel as bad because they were actually really happy there. It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's, you know, hard to understand at first is when you see these people or children and they have so little compared to what we would measure of worth or value, but they're incredibly happy, right? Like all those kids were running around and obviously incredibly happy that we were there and to get some stuff, right? So that was a pretty cool thing. I remember that first orphanage we went to and getting a tour around. Obviously there's just oodles and oodles of kids, and some of them aren't wearing shoes, and you know, their clothes are probably been not much left of them, right? And even going into the dorms where there's just rooms where probably like 100 kids are sleeping on open mats or beds, and you got no room to go, you know, for any privacy and those kind of things. And it was pretty crazy to see how many kids are living like that, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, for me, if I don't go back to Laos every 2 years, I need to go back to Laos every 2 years just to see how people with so little can be so happy. They are living in the moment. The trouble with today's world, in our world, is we always live in the past or we always live in the future. We seldom live in the moment. And because those kids are so poor and living in such, by our standards, such inadequate conditions, they're pretty much forced to be in the moment. And just to see the happiness and the joy. I don't know if you guys remember the meal we put together on that one Sunday.
Yeah, that was kind of gross, but cool at the same time.
Yeah. Why don't you describe the meal that we made for them, Holden?
What?
You remember? Describe the meal that we made for them.
Yeah.
That was special for them.
So basically, to break it down, it was a boiled pig that you cut and put in a bowl with rice. Me personally, I would not eat that, mainly because it was not put on a grill and turned into bacon, but that's just my preference. But
it was,
yeah, they liked it, I think.
It was the pig fat, right? Like, it was the skin and the pig fat that we cut
in. Yeah, it wasn't the meat.
Actually the meat.
It was just the fat. I mean, that was probably really good for them because all they get is like 2 cups of rice a day and like I think a few carrots that they grow in their garden. So they probably really enjoyed that.
Well, it was a special traditional meal. So it was basically pig fat with some rice and a few measly vegetables. And we fed 500 and some kids that day with $200. And you're right, I wouldn't have eaten that either, Holden. Not a hope. But I can report that things have gotten better there. I went over with Neil Weens here a while ago, and we did the same thing, and the meal was a lot heartier and tasty, and I did eat some of that. So things are improving. Actually, they're very dramatically and very quickly. You guys would be blown away by how improved things have been in just a couple of short years. But that's one of the things that really strikes me is their society, and I think their beliefs or religion. They're all Buddhists. Think about this, sports fans. On the weekend, there's 500 to 600 kids in this orphanage, and they're all managed by one adult. They range from the age of about 5 or 6 to about 19. And could you imagine that if you had a school full of kids in Western Canada from the age of 6 to 19, what that would look like with one adult? Happy that to report
not be good.
That would not be good. Not be good.
I mean, our teacher deals with 33 grade sevens. So, and she can barely manage that without an EA.
That's because you're in the class.
That is true.
Yeah.
So hold on. We spent a week in Langkorbang, and I think we spent 4 or 5 days traveling out to the different villages and delivering the clothes and stuff like that. There's a few moments for me that really stuck out, but I'm curious, Holden, what was some of the things that really stuck out for you, or some of the things that you really remember?
I mean, one of the things that I remember the most when we were going out to that village in the mountains was our driver got lost in like the middle of Asia, thousands of kilometers away from Canada.
So it was kind of scary. Can you just read the signs out there to get back to where you're going?
Huh?
I said, could you just read the street signs out there in the mountains on the dirt trail?
Oh, yeah, there was a sign that it said, turn here and there will be good, and then turn here, instant death. So we went there anyway. But...
Really?
No, I'm kidding. But one of the things that stuck out for me was, like, getting – when we pulled up after you guys were, like, halfway done, just getting to see the kids' faces, it was really nice because they were really happy.
Yeah, I remember, that one village was quite remote, and we had to cross the river on a barge, right? And Andrew, the guy we were with, he's just kind of goes with it, right? And so we were supposed to wait for you guys on the other side of the river, but he ate an apple or something and just decided we should go, and he just took off. And then halfway there, they're phoning the other driver's phone in and telling us that you guys were lost. So we kind of got split up, and we're on dirt roads, windy mountains, driving through riverbeds. Like, there's not a chance I would ever been able to get back out of there. And I was kind of wondering a little bit if I'm ever going to see my family again, or if they're just going to be lost forever. But we got to this village, and we, delivered all the clothes because we weren't sure if you guys were going to make it there or not. And, I remember at the end, all the kids and stuff had all their stuff, and they're just running back to their shacks and houses or whatever, and just, running around and showing stuff. And it was pretty cool to see how something that simple could bring so much joy.
One thing that I noticed was that when we finally got there, I walked into the room, and they were writing something on the board, like the three items. And I like looked at the classroom and there was like nothing there. There were no desks. And then I finally noticed that there was about like 50 kids in that one room that's like smaller than like our teacher's break room, all crammed into that one classroom.
It's true. And that's, I mean, they live and get taught in buildings that we wouldn't put animals in most cases, right? And somehow they're still very happy. And I guess the beautiful thing about Give a Shirt too, if you think about it by extension, and you know, I gotta give my daughter Kayla and a lot of credit for her innocent vision when she was 6 years old, is that this model can be replicated in probably 160 countries around the world. And I know from firsthand experience of, and both of you have expressed that the impact that it has on people is instantaneous and dramatic and long lasting. And so it gives me a lot of hope for the future of humanity. And it gives me a lot of hope for those that become involved in projects like this. And I know within the old AgriTrend network and now within the Earth, Dirt, Soil network, there's a lot of people like us doing similar things in different places. And I often wonder if we could figure out a way to combine the energy of all of those, all of the people that are doing all of these cool things, somehow in one place, what the potentiality would be. I think it would be giganormous. It's kind of like, I often wonder if we took all of, if we could somehow connect all of the cab drivers that have PhDs and master's degrees, somehow connect them in some kind of Uber universe, university, Uber university, what that group of people could create, right? Because there are so many brilliant people driving taxi cabs and Ubers around this planet. And the only reason they're doing that is that they're recent immigrants, and we as Canadians or Americans or whoever don't recognize their degrees or their qualifications, and all they want when they first come here is to make a better life for their kids. Just like every immigrant family that ever came to Canada or the U.S. is that's the first goal. Probably the first goal for your parents too, Holden, is they want your life to be even better than their lives. And so those are some of the random things that go through my head. And yeah.
Well, for sure. I think, you know, if I was to say one thing to people about just having an experience and how you look at life would be to somehow, some way, find a way, a place, a project to go and travel to a place like that and just to experience it, because it will change your life. It'll change how you look at things. And it's a challenge. It'll challenge how you feel about maybe the world isn't over when you drive over your cell phone, or if the Wi-Fi is down for 24 hours, maybe somehow, you know, that's not the end of the world. The reality is we live in a world today where we have so much, it actually creates a lot of problems. I think it creates a lot of mental health issues because we're always wanting more. And whether it's social media or what we see on TV, we live in this world where we feel like, well, if we have this, if we have a nicer house, we have a better car, you know, if we can play Fortnite all day long, somehow our life will be better. And really at the end of the day, none of that brings you happiness or meaning. It's about relationships. And I think that's, and then people. And I think that's the one thing that was so inspiring for me, especially going to Ethiopia. I realized on one hand, I felt so sad to see how little the people had. But on the other hand, I realize they actually have, in other ways, they're richer than we are in our culture because they value family and relationships so much. That's all that matters. And they have such a rich life of relationships and family and love and interaction. And we're a lot of times missing that in our world here. And so in some ways I felt by the time I left, you know, almost jealous of the way they look at the world and how full their life is of stuff that matters, because all the other stuff comes and goes, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, it was pretty awesome to be able to go and travel like that with the kids. I think a lot of people, even me included, I was scared of going to a different country, going to Asia. Is it going to be safe? You know, all these things. And that's why it was so nice to be able to go with someone. But once we got there, it was just incredible. The hospitality, everyone treated you like family. Whether it was going to, you know, you go to a restaurant or you walk down, I remember walking down the street and if you just even glanced over at the restaurant, they would see there was a group of us, right? There's like six of us with all of our family new, and you'd even just like glance over, you know, maybe looking like you might go to that restaurant, and the waiters or waitresses or whoever would be like, oh, you know, like they start moving tables around and trying to wave you in and like, you know, come on, well, you know, come in here. And I think like at home, like, you know, a lot of places that you go and you want them to combine tables or something, like, oh no, we can't do that. Or, you know, look at this people we got to deal with. And they just, everyone was so, they just treated you like family. And it was just such an amazing experience. And I remember, you know, so either way, traveling to those places, it gives you a different experience of culture. It was just a lot of fun. It was definitely by far the best trip that I've ever been on with the family. It was a lot of fun. And I think we some of the things that we wanted to think about or talk about was just some of the fun stuff that we did there, right? And I remember one of the things that stuck out a bit for me was when we did go to Vietnam, we went to Hoi An, and it's a bit famous for getting custom suits. I mean, there's like 800 custom tailors in that little town, right? So I remember us all going there to this place. This Ruben and the guy there was just, you know, they live in the back. It's all family. It's like farming, right? It's a family business. And so we all got measured up for suits and shirts and shoes, and Holden got a suit and we got suits and the girls got dresses made. And you go back the next day and then you got to get things fitted, right? And then buddy there's bringing out, oh, maybe you want a beer, right? Okay, well, that'd be great, you know? And then maybe we decide to order another couple shirts because it's a good time. And I remember in that short week, this guy almost like became like family, right? And then he convinced us that we should get some custom shoes made. And everyone over there in Asia just loved Holden, right? He had long hair and this white boy and
had just, the flow going. He had the flow going.
I remember as well, like a lot of times you go to the tourist attractions there and all these Asian people would want to get their photo with Holden. Like they'd be like, oh, can we get a photo or whatever? And he was like this poster boy over there. But this tailor guy really took a shining to you, Holden, too. And I remember when we went over to the shoe shop, which was just a couple blocks away, he got on his bike and he told you to hop on the back and he gave you this little bike ride. And it just, it's like, where would you go to have an experience like that?
We hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. Please take the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca. where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm. And now, back to the show.
Exactly. Exactly. Amazing people. Amazing. Think about this. Like, I know you guys get it, but I'm imagining some people watch this. So while we were in Vietnam, the minimum wage was increased in Vietnam. to $127 a month. And if you can make $127 a month, you're doing okay-ish. But as soon as you hit about $250, $300, and our host at the Airbnb we were at told us that as soon as you hit that threshold, $250 to $300 US dollars per month, you're kind of getting into the middle class. You're kind of making it. And yeah, it's like, if you think about that, holy camoly. Yeah. So that whole,
are you willing to work for $130 a month every day?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean,
I'll take that deal.
Yeah, I'll give you 135.
That's not a day. That's, you'd have to work every day to make that at the end of the month for the whole month.
Oh, that's kind of a scam. Like, you're probably working more than the people that are actually paying you. And then you, no, never mind. I'd rather make nothing.
What did you think of the whole tailor shop and the bike ride and that kind of thing?
I really liked it, mostly because I got a suit and it made me feel like it was cool, because you always look so cool in suits.
Yeah.
And my favorite part about getting a suit was being able to like reach inside, like, you know, like the John Wick pocket stuff. Anyway. My also favorite part was getting like a Pepsi every 3 seconds.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was feeding Elson and I beer, and he was feeding you Pepsis. He was bribing us with sugar. So yeah.
Sugar and alcohol. Yeah. Well, I guess alcohol is sort of sugar, but yeah. Hey, so I want to bring up something a little bit different. Before we got started here today, I asked Holden what he wanted to do in his life. And I'll let him explain that in a minute if he wants to. But this is one message that I would share with whoever has the audacity to watch this podcast. And that is, when I was a young man, Holden's age, I was absolutely spellbound by the space program and what was going on with, you know, the fight between Russia and the U.S. in terms of space travel. And I can remember clearly as a young man, maybe a little bit younger than Holden, but my goal then was to become an astronaut. And a lot of people, when I tell them that in today's world, kind of laugh about it. But I was convinced I wanted to be an astronaut. And what happened was, when I shared that with my teachers in the little village of Riley School, they all said, "Elston, you can't be an astronaut. You're Canadian." And you know what? Since then, there's been an awful lot of astronauts that are Canadian, and some of them are even older than I am. And so what I would say to Holden and his friends and anybody that's young out there that maybe has some supposed harebrained idea is, don't let people talk you out of it. Like, if that's what you want to do, then figure out a way to chase it down and do it. And because at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of people out there that think they know a lot of stuff about a lot of things. And especially in today's world, anything is possible. Absolutely anything is possible if you're been brought up in a fortunate country like Canada or the US or otherwise. And you know what? I'm still a little bit pissed off about the fact that they talked me out of that. But so, Holden, whatever dream you have, man. Sorry, Terry.
I was saying, maybe it's not too late.
Nothing's possible. I think either Musk or who's the Virgin guy?
Richard Branson.
Well, they both are promising suborbital trips around the moon. in the next decade for like $250,000. So I got to stay engaged in this game, and I got to get back into shape so that when they start launching those orbital trips around the moon, I'm going to plunk down $250,000 and I'm going to go for it. So maybe it is not too late.
You know how dangerous that is.
It's okay. When 10 years from now, I'll be 73. And if I cash in my chips, yeah, might be good. Anyway, in your lifetime, young man, in your lifetime, how old are you right now?
12.
12. So you're going to live to be like 98. Just think about it.
I hope so.
No, you will. Just think what's coming your direct, what coming your way. You can't even imagine what's coming your way. Because I couldn't imagine what came my way in my lifetime, nor could your father. And so what's coming your way in your lifetime will curl your hair if you knew what it was going to be. So stick to your dreams, buddy.
What do you feel? What do you figure the world's going to look like in 50 years from now, Holden?
Well, I feel like instead of me sitting in this chair, there wouldn't be any legs on it. It'd just be like floating. And there wouldn't be AirPods. There'd be like, it'd be like something like air sound, just like bloop and then sound just appears somewhere. That's what I feel like. And they won't be called cars anymore. They'll be called fast moving thingies. Or like something really weird.
FVTs. Fast moving.
Like already, I saw this thing. It was like about a new car or something. And like the keys for it. It's like a touch screen. It's like a phone, but like for the car. And you can like press a button and it like changes the color on the car. You can like put stickers on the car by pressing a button. Like changes colors and like you make it like plaid or something. I was thinking that's gonna be like the old thing in 50 years.
Yeah.
You're gonna have something where you just look at the car, imagine what you want it to be. And then it will be that. Or the other option is it's just going to be a full-on Ready Player One movie. It's going to be the year 2040. And we're going to be in the Oasis looking for an egg.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of things that will change very quickly. Yeah, and it's crazy to even look back 10 years ago about some of the stuff that we have now compared to then and how quickly things change, right? And you know, as much as we talk about, I mean, I think this is an interesting theme, and I know Rob brings it up once in a while about the factfulness. I mean, as much as we talk about these areas in the world that aren't as well off, you know, the reality is the world is getting better every day. And these places are getting better. They still need help. They're still less fortunate than we are. But it drives me crazy. It drives me crazy when you get talking with someone and they're like, oh, more people are dying from cancer every day, you know, or, you know, the world's getting worse. There's more people dying of starvation, hunger. And the reality is that is absolutely untrue. It's not based, are backed by any evidence at all. People are living longer. There's less people dying of cancer. You know, there used to be so many child deaths due to, you know, disease or drowning or just the simplest things, right? And so a really, really crazy, but also interesting book like Factfulness by Hans Rosling, right? And we have these mental biases, built into us, built into our brains and what we see that affect the way we think. And I think that's one thing that you used to talk about, Elson, too, is just the bias confirmation, right? Or confirmation bias, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the reality, and you've nailed it, is that today's world is the best, the safest, the most enriched world that's ever been on this planet, at least as far as we can tell. And all of that has happened in less than 100 years. And so, you know, the likes of us and Holden and his siblings are literally living like princes and princesses, like in terms of what was happening even 100 years ago. And so, you know, I happen to be an abundance guy. I think not many people are. And all I see is opportunity. And I really am encouraged about the future. I've got 4 kids, right? I've got 5 grandkids, and I have really, at the end of the day, I have no other option but to feel optimistic about the future and what the good in humanity is, opposed to dwelling on the negativity and the bad of humanity. You think about, if you want to ratchet things down to some really cool stuff, and that is, one half of the world is here because of the Haber-Bosch process. That's a human invention, probably the most powerful human invention of all time that nobody knows anything about. Half of humanity is here because of the Haber-Bosch process. And we could probably do a podcast just on that. But things continue to get better. You wouldn't know it listening to US politics and all that stuff, but the world is getting better. And I hope that trend continues, because everything that Holden just suggested will be greatly surpassed, and things will happen that we can't even imagine today. Just look at my life. When I was born in 1956, there was 2.5 billion people on this planet, and now there's 7.5 billion. Yeah, and the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is that I thought I could help feed a starving planet, where the planet was going to collapse because of starvation or nuclear war or the end of energy or the next ice age or. And I just felt, you know, growing up on that dairy farm, that maybe my role is to help feed the world. And I guess as I meandered through that decision at a very young age, and now that I'm older and I've figured out that my real life calling is being a coach and helping better other people's lives, it's like, let's just keep this train going. Because, you know, I see on this trip that we did together, I see the energy and the exuberance and the mental capacity of your entire family. And it's like, wow, anything's possible. So, you know, yeah. there's a few sayings that I think that are really powerful, Holden. And one of them is learn, unlearn, and relearn, and do that constantly. And what I mean by that is, you're going to learn stuff that is kind of true for the time being, but then you need to unlearn it so you can relearn the next iteration, the next evolution of things. And we as humans need to do that constantly. I talk a lot about connecting dots. Another favorite saying I have, and there's lots of them that I share with people that I talk to every year, but another one that comes to mind is, the future's already here. It's just unevenly distributed. And what that means is that there are technologies and practices and maybe even happiness in other parts of the world that we need to embrace in our part of the world. Similarly, we have knowledge and wisdom and all that sort of stuff that we can impart to those other areas. And in today's world, with smartphones and the internet and blah, 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 that can happen in a very, very rapid time frame. And so, I'm really encouraged about the future. I'm really encouraged about where the world is heading. And yeah, there's lots of hiccups and there's lots of things to be nervous about and everything else. But today's world is the safest, richest, most progressive place that humanity has ever experienced.
Yeah, for sure. And that reminds me of something that my dad would always get revved up about. And you know, when you go to a presentation, especially marketing, like great marketing or something, and there's always this theme. It's the same thing with oil, like running out of oil, but there's always this theme that like we're eventually going to get uber rich being farmers because we're going to run out of farmland and everyone's going to starve. And my dad's always like, I've been hearing that for 30 years already and it hasn't happened, right? So, but the reality is, yeah, there is a limited amount of resources, but there's an unlimited amount of knowledge and technology and science that helps us learn how to be more efficient and create more resources. And so I don't think we're ever going to see that happen. And I think there's going to be things happen in technology that we never dreamt of being possible happen. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting...
Well, you know, Terry, you know, in regard to that, there's a book that was written by Peter Diamandis and his co-author, his name escapes me now, but called Abundance. And then there was another, the sequel to Abundance. And, you know, everybody right now on this, that's on the negative or the scarcity side of the equation, worried about the number of people we're going to add between now and when Holden is going to be like, 40.
Yeah.
We're going to have another 1.5 to 2.5 billion people. And like I said earlier, when I was born, there was 2.5 billion people. Now there's 7.5 billion people. I think as a society, we figured out how to feed people and improve their lives. But the thing that stuck to me the most from the Book of Abundance was that if we add 2 more billion people, we're not only adding 2 more billion people, we're adding 2 more billion people who have ideas and creativity and intellect and inventions and, you know, all of that stuff. So, holy shit, what possibly could come out of 2 more billion people with, you know, a whole bunch of additional tools? Yes, there will be some assholes in that group. Over and above all of that, there will be a tremendous amount of positivity, people that will invent shit that we can't even imagine. And if I could summarize the Book of Abundance, that's what I would boil it down to is, yeah, we're going to add some folks, but there's going to be some really smart people in there. There'll be the next Einstein or the next Elon Musk or the next whoever, right? And that excites me about the planet. That excites me about humanity.
Yeah. And I mean, I never thought about it in that way, but you know, the reality is one of the things that, you know, we learn at Coach as well too, is, you know, the biggest opportunities come from your biggest challenges. Right. And that's an opportunity there. The challenge of having more people, the opportunity is there's more people to solve the problem. Right. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Crazy world, Holden. Hang on, buddy. Strap in.
So what about you, Holden? Do you have an abundance mindset or do you have a scarcity mentality? Do you think things are going to get better? Or are you always worried about the world's going to cave in and collapse?
I honestly don't really know because, I mean, I want to like think that it's all okay, but our teacher is kind of like, the world's all going to end in a fiery ball of death. Her exact words. That was, yeah. No, last year we did this booklet about like pollution and stuff. And they were like, if we don't get all zero pollution by the year 2099, the world's literally gonna explode. And I was just like, that's a lot to take in, you know, like last year being in grade 6, 11 years old, and you're working on like how to solve the world's problem with pollution and stuff. And I was just thinking, like, what do you expect me to do? I mean, like, I can help. I like throw the recycling in the recycling bin, but that's like pretty much it.
So, like, at what grade do you think that you'll be ready to solve the world's problems? Like,
oh, like easily in the next month or so. I have a good feeling.
All right, love it.
Now you're prepared, hey?
Yeah.
So, what else are you learning in school that's going to help you solve the world's problems in the future?
Well, in social studies in grade 7, we're learning, we're a bunch of 12-year-olds put in a situation where there's a zombie apocalypse on Earth, and we're the leaders of a new country, and we have to, like, save a whole bunch of people, put them in a safe environment, and that's, like, has access to everything, keep all the same resources on the Earth. And I'm just thinking, I could so do that. Like, but that also would, like, be absolutely terrifying at the same time.
Very interesting.
I kind of forgot the question. And I just, yeah.
Well, what you're learning in school to help save the world in the future.
Oh, yeah. Then I'm prepared.
You're prepared. You feel fully prepared.
We even named our country.
What did you name your country?
It starts with a D because we were thinking about like Dora and stuff.
Dora the Explorer?
Yeah.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. I think a bit of that whole mentality and stuff really comes from overcoming fear, right? And people just instinctively think that there should be something to be afraid of. And I think this, you know, I heard this one time at a conference is really interesting because, you know, when we were running around with, you know, as caveman out in the wild and, you know, killing wild animals to eat and stuff, when the bushes rattled, you know, that fear instinct was what kept you alive. So the saber-toothed tiger didn't jump out and eat you. Right. And,
exactly.
And that's programmed into us instinctively. But now we live in this world where really there's nothing to fear. Like, you know, there's going to be no, in most cases, you know, there's going to be no wild animal come out and eat you or whatever else. So we're constantly fed by fear in the media, whether it's environmental, and I'm not saying that those things aren't real, but there's always this constant like, oh, well, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. We're drawn into that. And it's really interesting because, you know, it's another thing that we talk a bit about coach and Dan Sullivan. He was at our last coach session and we chatted with him for a bit. And he stopped watching TV, like no social media, no TV, no anything for over a year now. Yeah, look at Olden's reaction, just like.
That's actually insane. I don't think I could honestly last one day, like, no.
So yeah, this is how programmed this is into our life. Like you think about Holden, you couldn't even go one day without your Xbox and TV and whatever it is, right? But
no, I'd like crawl up into a ball and probably cry.
Yeah. So imagine, but this is like this is really. It subconsciously programs how we think and feel about stuff and we're not even realizing it. And it's getting more that way with, you know, your phones listening to your conversation and putting ads on you, even when you're not on the internet and things like this is just freaky stuff, but it's really happening. But anyways, the reality is he said, you know, after you wouldn't believe how much better the world seems today. Now, yeah. After home for a year without any social media or TV or whatever, and removing all of that negative influence, negative stream going into your body and your brain every single day.
Well, I mean, you brought up the confirmation bias thing before that, you know, I've been talking about for a few years. I haven't recently, but we're actually programming the Holdens of the world with scarcity confirmation bias at a very young age. And that is a really, really scary concept. We're being programmed consciously and subconsciously at a very, very young age. And the reality is a lot of that negative confirmation bias is about creating fear, because when people are afraid, guess what happens? They can be controlled. When people are not afraid, they cannot be controlled. And the bulk of at least the first world or the developed world or whatever the proper terminology is today, because that's another way we're getting programmed, is you got to be so careful with your words, because you may offend some extreme minority somewhere, is that we're being programmed to be afraid so that we can be controlled. And I mean, that's psychology sort of 101, chapter 2, page 3 kind of stuff, right? And as societies, we seem oblivious to it. That's why I love going to Laos. Those people are living in the moment because they are poor. They have to be in the moment to survive, and they filter out all of the bullshit. I think I could be imposing my confirmation bias on them, but because they're just struggling to live, and they're somehow in the midst of all of that, they're happy. So some more stuff to kind of think about a little bit, but yeah, I don't know how I ended up here. But.
Yeah. it's an interesting thing to think of. And it's one of the cool things, you know, doing this podcast, and also, you know, having Holden be able to join me a bit, and it's pretty insightful and entertaining at times to see kind of the perspective of the youth, right? The next generation, and what they're seeing and feeling and being taught or are influenced by, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, talking about fear and overcoming fear reminds me of one of the cool experiences that we had when we were in Vietnam too, at the end of our trip. And I've always envisioned you, Elson, for those that don't know you, you're a very large Norwegian man, like kind of old Viking blood, you know, kill and conquer kind of thing. And
that's why I'm going the flow.
Yeah, that's right. And so I've always envisioned you as this like fearless, you know, big, strong kind of Viking heritage. And we're at the beach there one day, and we see the parasailing there, and you're looking at it, and I'm scared of heights. I'm really scared of heights, but you're like, oh, I really want to do that. And I'm like, oh, I'm pretty scared of doing it. And our daughter, Sarah, cause she's just a adrenaline junkie. And she's just like right away, yeah, I want to do that. And Aislinn and Holden all wanted to do it. And then when it came down, Aislinn chickened out. And so I did.
Yeah, Aislinn's a chicken.
Yeah, he chickened out, which probably was a smart idea. Because, you know, this wasn't necessarily the best boat. It was like $35 US for each of us to go. Like, I'm not sure they would have had much good insurance. And then Elsa starts telling us the story about this person when they were in Mexico went up parasailing and ran into a building and died or something like that. So, yeah. But anyways, Elsa wanted to do it, and Holden, we decided to pair Holden up with Elston.
That was a bad idea.
Yeah. And when we actually got to doing it the next day, I realized that Elston was actually petrified of doing this. And because you were like, and I'm like, what's going on? And you're like, I'm scared of heights and I'm scared of water and I'm totally petrified. And I was like, really? Like, this was your idea. Like,
you gotta commit.
Yeah.
That's my 9 quick start, Terry. That's my 9 quick start. Doesn't have to make sense. And then at the end of it, I tried to drum Holden.
What were you and Holden talking about when you were, 500 feet in the air, whatever it was, over the ocean?
Being Superman.
That's right. It was an amazing, like, the whole thing was amazing until the end.
The scariest part for me probably wasn't landing. I mean, that was very scary. But it was probably seeing the jellyfish in the water. Like,
there was a monster jellyfish.
I saw it in the water, and I'm like, and then when he went down to dip us, I could like see it. It was like right there. I was like, no, like, can I get off? Like,
oh yeah, I forgot that they dip you down in the water halfway through. Yeah, eaten by
jellyfish. Oh yeah, but we survived. It made us stronger. I checked off my bucket list stuff. Yeah.
I mean, almost survived.
Yeah. That was a pretty fun experience. And I mean, one of the cool things when we were in Vietnam there too, is just we stayed in the Airbnb. You get a host, you get to know the people that live. And that's the thing that I maybe cherish the most about traveling, is when you can get into those experiences where you actually meet people that live there. And there's a couple nights we, sat around, drank a bottle of wine with our host there and got to know her and learn about her kids and her family and the money and all that stuff. Right. And she actually lived just a couple houses down from where we were. And she was nice enough to tour us through her home and into their little garden in the back and stuff. And it was really interesting to learn that basically everybody, like when you ask them about, if they had Sundays off or what days of the week they took off, they were just kind of like, what do you mean? We just like work every day. There's no real holidays that way. Or
they're like, what's a Sunday?
Yeah. They didn't really have a concept of that. And they all worked like 2 or 3 jobs, but anyways, they showed us the garden there and how to water the garden. And Holden, maybe you can describe that experience there and that, what that was all about.
Yeah, I got you. So basically, this woman's like mom, that was, or I think it was her grandma even, that was like 80 something years old, could lift like almost over 100 pounds of water on her neck. And my dad, who was like, 40 at the time,
not couldn't to lift my age.
50 over his neck. And I was like, I mean, like, Dad, you might not be my hero anymore. You might be the 80-year-old grandma.
Yeah, that old grandma got up and she watered those beds 5 a.m. 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. The things that they do to try to struggle and survive and to improve their lives is amazing.
And you think you got a tough Holden when I ask you to clean your room?
I mean, have you seen my room? Like,
and whose fault is that?
Yours. You didn't tell me to clean it earlier. Jeez.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, there's just a lot of cool stuff if you can get into that space. And I guess for me, the whole idea behind kind of growing the future, right, is about just having that mindset of continuous learning, being open to learning and improving, and also for those that have abundance in their life to be able to share it with those that don't. And one of the things that really, a quote that I kind of stumbled across through these journeys that really stuck with me was one is from, I think it was Roosevelt, but it goes something in the lines of, you know, the test of our progress isn't whether we provide more to those that have abundance. It's whether we provide enough for those who have very little, right? And it really made me think about, you know, how do we use our knowledge and how do we utilize the things that we have to help others that are less fortunate? And I remember especially being over in Ethiopia and thinking, you know, the only difference between us and them was where we were born, right? We were was born into an amazing country of abundance and opportunity. And what's hard to understand and hard to fathom, I think in North America, we live in this world of like conquerors, like we adventurers came over here and settled the land and we just did whatever we had to do to make it. And there's a real culture of innovation and entrepreneurship and just go out and do it. You know, that American or North American, you know, the world is your oyster kind of thing. And being over in Ethiopia, you know, we saw people harvesting grain with cows, you know, tromping through the grain and, you know, separating the grain by throwing it up in the air, like a 90-year-old guy blind in one eye that, you know, could probably hardly walk is out there flipping grain all day to, you know, manual separation. And this is like their world today. It's 50 years behind the old time harvest for hunger that we did. And it's so hard, you know, as North Americans, we go in there and just like, oh, well, let's just get some tractors and start plowing the land and put some fertilizer on and we'll be rich. You know, everyone will be eating, but it's just different. And when you try to understand it, it's really hard. And they found when we went to this museum while we were there and they have one of what they think is the oldest human fossil was found in Ethiopia. They think that might be, you know, kind of the birth of civilization, right? And I kept trying to think of how can, you know, humans have existed here maybe longer than anybody else, but they're so far behind in a way. And I think that, I forget the word that was used by our guide, this that we had with the Canadian Food Grains Bank there. And we called him Indiana Jones because he was this old, good old Mennonite boy from Manitoba. He had a chunk missing out of his ear and he's got like all these war stories of like landing on some grass strip in the middle of the Sahara and like just amazing, amazing guy with all kinds of experiences. But he talked about when you have nothing, there's no aspiration. And so all you worry about is having food for today. You don't even think about tomorrow because all you worry about is if I have enough to eat today, that's all that matters. And it's very difficult to program that out of people and out of the culture. And so I remember going as an example that we went to like a demonstration where they were showed the growers or the farmers how to grow corn better, right? Out in the desert, they had irrigation. They were sheep farmers and there's nothing to eat and they were all starving. So they started showing them how to grow corn with irrigation. And they had the farmer plot was just scattered seed and they plowed it with a cow. And beside it, they had their demonstration plot where they planted the seeds individually and the corn was beautiful and nice and way better yield, right? And then when we asked the farmers why they wouldn't do that instead of just throwing it on the ground and plowing it in with the cattle, through the translation, they came back and said, well, because that's like twice as much grain. And we, you know, it's like way more work to take all the grain off. And they didn't actually need the extra grain, right? And maybe it was hard for them to take it to market. So it's like, well, this is enough. We don't need any more than enough. And in one way, it seems absolutely crazy and mind-boggling to think about that. But on the other hand, we live in a world where more is never enough, and we always need more. We always want more, no matter what. And there's got to be a balance in there somewhere. But it was really mind-blowing experience to try to get your head around that, right, and understand that.
I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okay.
So while Holden is doing his biological thing, two things come to mind that I think need to be addressed or spoken about during this podcast. And however this thing is going to get edited and everything else is. Anyway, number one, when you speak of abundance, my phone just died.
You just went sideways. I think we lost ya. Okay, we're just waiting for Elson to get back on here. What happened to you, Holden? No, you went out too. Where's your video?
No, I'm back. Oh, there. Hi, Dad.
We should have this podcast sponsored by 7-Up.
Oh, yeah.
Since you've been drinking it all podcasts. There we go. We got Elston back here.
All right. So I'm back. So actually, since I got started, I think there's three things that I want to talk about when it comes to abundance. And I don't know if we're coming near to the end of the podcast, but I'm not sure about the order. Well, I'll try it this way. Number one, Terry, when I first met you 12 or 13 years ago, your farm was 5,000 acres, right?
Yep.
And now I don't know where you're at exactly, but I think you're north of 15,000. And I remember when I first met you, you were kind of this, I don't know what the hell you were. You're kind of this punk rocker looking guy, piercings and all this weird hair and everything going on. And your dad wasn't 100% sure you could pull this off. And now here we are sitting and you're doing all this cool stuff in a lot of cool areas and have had tremendous experiences over the years. And most recently, you know, you brought on three young children in your family. And so when you think about an abundance mentality, you and your family are kind of the poster children for that. The other piece that I would say is that, and it relates back to your Ethiopian story, and I had a similar experience in Nigeria and probably a few other places, but if anybody is interested in changing the world in tiny little increments, check out Kiva loans, $25. A Kiva loan is $25. You donate it, you don't donate it. You loan it to people in impoverished circumstances, and they will repay you. And then you can recycle that money, and you can positively uplift people in every corner of this planet through www.kiva.org, I think it is. I've become somewhat obsessed with that organization. It's really, really cool. And then the third piece is on Saturday, I have the opportunity to attend a memorial for Dr. Lorraine Bailey, who grew up in St. Vincent literally with nothing, and turned an opportunity of immigrating, I don't know which is the right word, to Canada, and turned that opportunity into becoming one of Canada's most recognized soil scientists. And I had the opportunity to know him when I was working with the University of Alberta and then subsequently Alberta Agriculture, but I also was able to talk him into becoming a senior agri coach with AgriTrend. And he even was helping us out towards the end with Earth, Dirt, Soil. But unfortunately, he passed away a couple of months ago. And the thing that I remember about, and will always remember about Dr. Lorraine Bailey, is that every time I think about Lorraine, my heart smiles. My face smiles and my heart smiles. And so I hope, I mean, he is one of those people that exemplifies coming from nothing and making his life so plentiful and abundant, and creating three amazing daughters who are going to continue his legacy, and a bunch of grandkids and everything like that. And he's kind of the second poster child of abundance. So kivaloans.org, the Eberhard experience here, going from 5,000 to 15,000 and doing all that crazy stuff that we've talked about and a whole bunch more, and Dr. Lorraine Bailey. And those are, yeah, those three things exemplify how wonderful this world can be.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing to share. I mean, Lorraine was one of those guys that just had so, one of the most passionate people I've ever met. Just incredibly passionate, incredibly knowledgeable, so much willingness to help you out. And he would get so emotional about how passionate he was. It would get you choked up all the time. And, you know, there's very few people like that you cross paths with in your life. And it's always an honor and pleasure to have had the opportunity to work with Lorraine and learn from him as well. And that's kind of, again, one of the reasons why we wanted to do this and do this podcast and do these type of things, is to be able to have those kind of conversations. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't have an opportunity to have a conversation like this with Lorraine while he was still with us. But, you know, just to be able to share knowledge and share the things that you love and are passionate about and dream about, and help to inspire others to achieve the things that they want to do in their lives. And so hopefully through all this, not only are we able to learn and grow together, but hopefully we inspire others to do the same and help and recognize and celebrate those that have inspired us to do the things that we've done in our life, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a crazy, wonderful world.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really sure it can go much of anywhere from there. I mean, I think that's probably a good place to recognize, you know, maybe we can dedicate this episode and this podcast to Lorraine in his memory. He's definitely one of those guys that just, yeah, came from nothing. And if you had ever had the opportunity to hear his story and what he's done in his life. And I remember, you know, when he turned like 80 or 82, he started going to the gym and pumping iron and lifting weights, and, you know, just, it's just amazing inspiration of what somebody can do.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I just realized I've been putting my hand on my chest a lot, and that's because my heart feels very full. So
yeah. So maybe within the theme of the conversation and the podcast today, we'll just go around as, you know, as we wrap up here, you know, this concept of growing the future, what does that mean to you, Elson?
Well, I think for me, growing the future, I mean, is a pretty good summary of where I've come to my life is that as a coach and as a father and as a grandfather and everything else, I think my goal for all of my career, and especially now, has always been about helping others be better. And I think the only way we can truly grow the future is by as many of us as possible to help as many others be better. And I'm not sure what, I mean, everybody's version of what makes them better is different. But if I'm able to and have been able to, help others improve their lives, no matter where they are on this planet, and if when I leave this earthly plane and some other facsimile of me can get up and say, the one thing that I remember or that I feel about Elston while he was on the planet is that every time I think about him, my heart smiles, then that would be pretty powerful. So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking right now. It might change by 20 years from now, but I think that's what growing the future is all about, is growing Holden's future, growing your family's future, growing as many people's future as possible. And if somehow we can collaborate and amplify that sentiment, then I think, I don't think, I know at the end of the day, the world will be a much better place.
That's very cool.
I'm still great. Pissed off that my teachers told me I couldn't be an astronaut.
For sure. So Holden, what does that mean for you? What's your closing comments on the podcast here today?
Don't really know, to be totally honest. I did have no plan for this at all.
Anything you want to add before we wrap up here?
Not really.
You've said your piece.
Yep.
Awesome, man. Well, it was awesome having you part of the call. And for me, I was really looking forward to this. Elston's always been a huge inspiration to me in my life and my growth path, I guess. And I always used to kind of fondly and still do, back in the AgriTrend days, an amazing group that we had there, always called Elston the Obi-Wan Kenobi to all the coaches. And I've always felt that, the ultimate success is not necessarily being the young Jedi, right? That's what everyone always focuses on is, the Luke Skywalkers, the young Jedis of the world always get all the attention, right? But it's really the Obi-Wan Kenobis, the teachers, the coaches that help us all get to where we want to get. And the ultimate success in my mind is having the abilities and the passion and the coaching to help people become better than you ever could have yourself, right? And help the next generation continue to grow and evolve into something bigger, better, stronger, faster, all that stuff, right? And so I think that's one of the cool things about being able to share this time with you, Elston, and share this with Holden is just, to learn and grow together. And thank you for being an inspiration to me and our family and the experiences that we've had, and inspiring me to be a part of this podcast with my brother Dan, and try to compete with his amazing wit and charm and all the cool stuff that he's doing. So it's been an honor and a pleasure, and looking forward to the conversations to come in the future.
I figured out what I wanted to say.
Okay.
This video is sponsored by 7-Up.
Cool. Maybe we'll get our first sponsorship for the podcast. And, definitely see you drinking that the whole time. Probably part of one of the reasons you need to step out quietly near the end of the call here, but.
Just kidding. It's not actually sponsored for all of those people that thought it was. But yeah, it should be.
It should be.
We have my case over here. Just opening the mini fridge.
Well, we definitely enjoyed your comments and entertainment on the podcast again, Holden. And so far, that's what everyone talks to me about the podcast that we've been involved in is Holden's contribution to the bigger part of the whole. So better keep it coming.
Okie dokie.
No, this is really good. Thanks for hanging out with us two old guys. And I really appreciate what happened here this afternoon and this evening. And I look forward to a lot more experiences. If anybody's interested in going to Laos, there's going to be another CCANT sent for delivery in February, and then we need some people to help. So if you want the trajectory of your life to change absolutely dramatically, that would be something to think about. So www.giveashirt.ca. You can learn some more about it there. And obviously Terry and I and Holden again, if you like. So, Terry Holden, thanks for the opportunity. I feel a lot lighter right now than I did earlier today. So, thank you.
Cool, man. It's been awesome. So, with that, we're going to sign off and catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.